Thank you. I appreciate the good song service this morning and the good prayer with Brother Joe, and still stand in need of your prayers. What I have on my mind this morning is a subject, a short story in the Bible that all of you are well acquainted with and know. Sometimes we have these little things we refer in the Bible that we refer to from time to time, but we never really take time to go look at them. And one of these has been on my mind. It's in the 8th chapter of John, the Gospel of John, 8th chapter. We have an incident here that's 11 verses long that all of you are well acquainted with, but sometimes we think we know what they're about, and then if we really read them, we find out there's a deeper meaning here. And that's what I hope, if the Lord will be with me, that we can look at this morning and perhaps learn from. 8th chapter of John, beginning with verse 1. Jesus went unto the Mount of Olives, and early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him, and he sat down and taught them. And the scribes and the Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that we should be, that such should be stoned, but what saith thou? This they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down, and with his finger wrote in the ground, as though he heard them not. And when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said unto him, He that is without sin among you, let him cast a first stone at her. Then he stooped down again and wrote in the ground. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning with the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had lifted up himself and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? She said, No man, Lord. And Jesus said unto her, Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. I think there's a good lesson in this for us, and we, you know, we've heard this story about the woman that was caught in adultery, and that's referenced from time to time, and you'll hear it brought up. But I want to take time to go through and look at this a little bit and examine it a little bit, and I believe there's a stronger lesson here that all of us can learn from, myself strong, very much included. This comes at a time in Christ's life when he is really under attack. If you just go back one chapter in the 7th chapter of John, first verse, after these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk in Jewry, which means Judah, the land where Jerusalem is. He would not walk there because the Jews sought to kill him. They were trying to kill him. Verse 5, it said, you know, even his own brethren didn't believe in him. Verse 11, they were at this the feast of the Passover feast. Then the Jews sought him at the feast and said, Where is he? And there was such murmurings among the people concerning for him. For some said, He is a good man. Others says, No, he deceiveth the people. In verse 15, and the Jews marveled, saying, How knoweth this man letters, having never learned? They were critical of him because he's supposed to be a poor man, yet he understood the gospel. Down in verse 25, then some said of the Jerusalem, Is not this he whom they seek to kill? Verse 30, then they sought, the Pharisees sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him because the hour was not yet come. They were kept trying to arrest him so they could put him to death. Verse 32, the Pharisees heard that the people murmured such things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. They wanted to arrest him. They kept trying to get people, and they authorized people here to go and arrest him. When they tried to arrest him, though, verse 44, and some of them would have taken him, but no man laid hands on him. Then came the officers to the chief priests and Pharisees, and they said unto them, Why have you not brought him? Why didn't you arrest him? And the officers answered and said, Never man spake like this man. No man's ever talked like this guy. And that's what we see coming up here. Jesus talks in a way that has an impact on us. And he gives us lessons that have a big impact on us. We have here in the 8th chapter, the first few verses, or 11th verses, Jesus is there teaching, and they bring him a woman who was caught in the very act of adultery. And they said, you know, under Moses' law, we're supposed to put her to death, stone her. But what say you? And we know that she wasn't stoned. But for a second here, before I get into that, let's go back and see what the law said. They quoted here in verse 5, now Moses in the law commanded us that that should be stoned, but what saith you? Well, they quoted from Moses' law. Let's go back and look what Moses had to say. Back in the 22nd chapter of Deuteronomy, and I'm just going to do this quickly, but you can go there if you like or wait. Verse 22, Deuteronomy 22:22. If a man be found lying with a woman married to a husband, then they shall both of them die, both the man that lay with the woman and the woman, so shall they put away evil from Israel. Verse 23, if a damsel, he goes through various scenarios here. If a damsel that is a virgin be betrothed unto a husband, and a man find her in the city and lie with her, then ye shall bring them both out of the gate of that city, and ye shall stone them with stones that they die. He goes through various scenarios here about what constitutes adultery, but in each case, when it actually constitutes adultery, you put them both to death, you stone them. Go back into Leviticus chapter 20, verse 10. And the man that committeth adultery with another man's wife, even he that committeth adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress, shall surely be put to death. That was the law they were talking about. But you go back here to Deuteronomy 17, and like, you know, Jesus said, whichever one of you wants to cast the first stone. If you go to Deuteronomy 17, beginning in the 6th verse, at the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses, takes two or three to testify against you. Have to have two or three witnesses against you. At the mouth of two or three witnesses, shall he that is worthy of death be put to death. They said if you caught him in adultery, that they were put to death. But here it says it takes two or three witnesses to put someone to death. You have to have a pretty strong case against you. Two or three witnesses, he that is worthy of death shall be put to death. But at the mouth of one witness, shall he not be put to death? Can't do it on one testimony of one. It takes two or three witnesses to put someone to death. Verse 7. The hands of the witnesses shall be first upon him to put him to death. If you're going to stone him to death, if that's the method and that's what it was for adultery, then whoever his accusers, they're the ones that picks up the first stone and stones them. That's what he's saying here. It takes two or three witnesses, and the hands of the witnesses shall be the first to put him to death, to go after him. Another interesting phrase in here on Deuteronomy 17, beginning in verse 16, he's talking about the kings and the men shall not multiply horses to himself, not cause the people of Egypt to return to Egypt. In verse 17, neither shall he multiply wives to himself. Men were not supposed to have multiple wives. That was a common practice in the old days. King David had multiple wives. Solomon had, I can't remember, 700 or 900 wives and 300 concubines. That was one of those routine things that were routinely violated. Just because they say it was the law of Moses doesn't mean that the people of Israel didn't violate it. They regularly violated a lot of these. But they used like that over there about stoning someone. They used it when it worked to their benefit, but didn't use it when it didn't work to their benefit. That was the hypocritical nature of a lot of those scribes and Pharisees in those days. And Christ knew this. But they would always use the law of Moses when they needed to. Now let's go back. Now that we kind of looked and we know what the law is, if you commit adultery, you got to be put to death. The adulterer and the adulteress are put to death and stoned. And the people that accuse them are the ones that can throw the first stones. Go back now to John chapter 8. Jesus went into the Mount of Olives, went out overnight and spent it on the Mount of Olives. We don't know whether he stayed on the Mount or stayed in someone's homes. But it says in verse 2, and early in the morning, he came back to the temple. Now, my guess is he didn't get a very good night's sleep if he went out to Olives. But anyway, either way, early he got up and went to work to teach the people. Early in the morning, he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him. He had a pretty good crowd inside the temple to come and listen to him. And he sat down and taught them. And the scribes and the Pharisees, remember, these are the guys that's been trying to catch him and arrest him and put him to death over in just a chapter right before this. All the scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. Pharisees bring her up, and of course, I'm going to tell you that I believe this is a setup. You know, they're unhappy with Jesus. They don't really care about the woman. They regularly violated the laws of Moses. But they're going to use him here. If this is the guy who he says he is, if he's really the Son of God, let's put him to the test. They bring and says, the law of Moses. Now, if you're the Christ, you're the Lord, you're the one who laid down the law of Moses, you got to follow it. So we're going to put him to the test. And he says, and Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. You know, adultery is one of those things you do in secret. You do everything you can to keep it quiet. If you're guilty of this, you don't want to get caught. You know, we know today you go hide out in a motel, you go hide out somewhere, you do it with a sleight of hand. It's not easy to get caught in the act. You know, you have it every now and then, you'll see where, you know, a spouse will catch another spouse in this, and they want to record it, and they break into hotel rooms. Y'all seen the TV shows. It's not easy to catch someone in the very act. How'd they catch this woman in the very act? Most people that read this and study it believe this was a setup. She was somehow set up to commit adultery so that they could catch her. There had to be two or three witnesses, so two or three of them had to see it take place. They bring her in front and say, now, Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. She's got to be stoned. You know, you don't commit adultery by yourself. It takes, as they say, it takes two to tango. Where's the man? Over there, remember, we read the law, and it said both of them are to be put to death. Both of them are stoned for taking adultery. Again, we're talking about adultery here, but I believe there's a bigger, deeper meaning here that I hope we can get to in a minute. But they're using the law to their benefit and trying to put Christ on the spot. You got to support the law of Moses. That's the law. Now, even though they didn't. Number one, where's the man? That's first. It should have been two people brought in front of him if it's truly a case. Adultery is not something you catch easily, so I believe it was a setup, and I believe that's what it's telling us here. She was set up. Where was the man? And if they caught her in the very act, there's a whole crowd gathered around him, including these Pharisees and scribes. I believe the other person, the other man or men, were there in that same crowd. But they didn't bring the man. They brought the woman. To catch them in the very act, it's not easy to do. They'd had to have that kind of thing set up so that they could test Christ here. So somebody had to see him. And remember, it takes two or three witnesses to put someone to death. So they had to have two or three people witness it. They had to have a situation where they knew she was going to commit adultery or set her up and do so. So we're having a situation here that already we believe that the Jews, the Pharisees, the high priest, this is the priest, the men of the cloth, the ministers, as we might call them today, the preachers, they set up a woman to get caught in adultery and brought her under Christ, didn't bring the man as the law required. Both, it's equal. It's not just one or the other, it's equal. Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what saith thou? That's kind of an unusual question to ask Christ. Under the law, Moses' law, which if you're the Lord or the Son of the Lord and Lord part of the Lord yourself, you know you got to follow Moses' law. So they say, that's what the law says, but what sayest thou? They expected him to say something different. Because they say, but what sayest thou? What do you say about this? This is the man who had been eating with sinners and publicans and harlots. He'd been taking them out to eat, eating at the table with them. You know, that was one of the things he was critical of back over in the early Gospels, was eating with sinners and publicans, tax collectors and harlots, other people that people despised, not the top of society, but the bottom of society. That's who he'd been eating with and socializing with and meeting with. And he had preached this thing called forgiveness. It's a big deal in his Sermon on the Mount. He talked about how important it is that we get into forgiveness. And it's sometimes hard for us to judge our fellow man because we don't see the boulder in our own eye when we're trying to judge someone else's speck in their eye. And that Sermon on the Mount teaches us about forgiveness, even in the prayer to the Lord, you know, forgive us this day our forgive us of our sins as we forgive those who sinned against trespass against us. Then he goes on and talks about sinning, and over later he tells Apostle Peter about how many times you have to forgive. You have to forgive not seven times, but seven times 70. Forgiveness is a big issue for Christ. So this is what they're asking him here. This is what us lawyers call, are you still beating your wife question. Doesn't matter how you answer that, you're wrong. You know, if I ask you if you're still beating your wife, that means if you say no, I'm not still beating her, but you did. But if you say yes, that means you are still beating her. Either way, you've admitted that you're not a good guy because you're still beating your wife. This is what this is. If he answers, we've got to follow the law of Moses, then he's putting to condemnation those people who he's been forgiving and been socializing with. He was big on forgiveness. If he says, no, don't follow the law of Moses, we've got to forgive this lady, then he doesn't follow the law of Moses. That's what the Jews believed in, even though they didn't follow it themselves. They believed in the law of Moses. So they were putting him, either way, they got him. See, they've got it. This is one of those questions. And that's why it says in the next verse, verse 6, this they said, tempting him that they might have to accuse him. See, we're fixing to set him up. Either way, we got him. Either he's going to look bad and hypocritical with all these sinners and harlots that he's been forgiving, or he's going to be going against the law of Moses, which then we can get all the Jews turned against him. So they've set him up both ways. Over there, back in Matthew, and I believe it's somewhere in the 25th, I forget where it is there, but you know, when Jesus was asked several questions, and it says that the Pharisees came to him with the Herodians and asked him, you know, is it proper for us to pay taxes unto Caesar? Now, this is the same way. They've got him either way. If he says no, because the Jews were unhappy with Caesar having control of them, and if he said no, don't pay taxes, then he's violating the law of Rome and can be arrested for that. If he says does pay taxes, then the Jews are going to be unhappy with him again because they didn't believe in paying taxes to Caesar. You know, and that's when he came out, he said, pull out a coin, and whose picture is it on there? The money you pay with, whose picture is it? Caesar's on there. And he said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, and render unto God that which is God's. It's kind of hard to cross-examine this guy. If there's any people that I'd ever want to cross-examine, it wouldn't be the Lord. But that's what they're doing here. They're putting him to the test here by hitting it up and having him, giving him a question that either way, he's going to be wrong. They said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground as though he heard them not. There's a couple of things in here that are not really doctrinal, but I find it interesting because I've had people ask, this is kind of clumsy. Jesus standing there and he had to stoop over. How does he do that? How does he stoop over? Did he kneel down, squat down, and did he have to bend over? It's real clumsy for him to have to do that, and why would he have done that? If you go back and look at verse 2, and early in the morning he came into the temple, and all the people came into him, and he sat down and taught them. Jesus was sitting down when this question was asked. Back in that day, they had the temple, but the floor in it was a dirt temple. And the floor in it was had dirt in it. So they usually bring a small mat of some kind and sit on it, like you probably would at the beach. You know, many of you have seen these little beach mats you go sit on. That's what he was doing. So all he had to do was reach over on the outside of that mat, and that's what he's talking about. He just was sitting down there teaching, and they came and interrupted his teaching. I'm sure he listened, and he reached over and writing in the dirt. He wrote with his finger, wrote on the ground as though he heard them not. And when they continued asking, he kind of ignored them. And they kept bothering him. And when they continued asking, he lifted up himself and said unto them, he raised back up and looked at them, he that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. Who is those are accusing her? Number one, and those of you that have no sin, y'all get to cast the first stone. If you go back and study this and read the commentary, this is not talking about general sin, he that is without sin. This is talking about a specific sin. It's the specific sin that was being addressed here in this example. It's about adultery. That's what he's asking. He who is without the sin of committing adultery among you, let him first cast a stone at her. Anybody here? You're accusing this woman of adultery. Whoever here hasn't committed adultery, cast the first stone. Now keep in mind, he preached in the Sermon on the Mount. A man that looks at a woman and lusts after her has committed adultery in his heart already. So it's going to be hard not to commit adultery for most of us men. You know, I've said many times there's the Ten Commandments, and there's a couple in there physically I've never committed. But when you start looking into my heart, I'm guilty of all ten. I can't get away from that. But here it's being specific. He that is without sin among you, let him be the one to cast the first stone at her. What did you do in the law if you suspected that your spouse, your wife, was committing adultery, but you didn't have the witnesses? What if you thought that your wife had run off and lain with a man, but you couldn't prove it? You just suspected it, and you were jealous about it. Go with me back to the book of Numbers. This is another part of the law of Moses. In the book of Numbers, chapter 5, beginning verse 11, this is the law concerning jealousy. And the Lord, I'm not going to read all of this because it goes through verse 31. It gives you several examples. But it says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, If any man's wife go astray, and commit a trespass against him, and a man lie with her carnally, and it be hid from the eyes of her husband, and be kept close, and she be defiled, and there is no witness against her, neither she be taken with in the manner, she didn't get caught. There's no proof against her, there's no witnesses against her, but he believes she's committed adultery. Well, what do you do?" Well, it goes through here, and I'm not going to, let me summarize it for you, because it goes all the way through verse 31. But it says, if a man believes that his wife has committed adultery, but yet he can't prove it, and there's no witnesses against her, he is to take her to the priest and to the council, and set her in there, and the priest is to take holy water. Now, if we've heard of holy water today, this is one time it's mentioned there in that fifth chapter of Numbers. Holy water was something they did to take somebody that was unclean and make it clean. If you touched something dead, you know, if you did something you weren't supposed to, something that was defiled, some unclean food, if you ate snakes or something like that, or at that time, you know, it was hogs, too. Hogs were unclean at that time. You couldn't eat those. Those were unclean animals, and if you touched something that's dead, to clean yourself, you had to use holy water. Holy water, they took a red heifer calf, and killed it, slayed it, drained the blood out of it, and then set it on fire and burned it. Then you took the ashes and mixed it with water and blessed it, and that was holy water. That was used back in the Old Testament. And if you had an unclean area, you would sprinkle holy water on it. If somehow a man or woman were unclean, if they were trying to bring them out of leprosy and they would sprinkle that holy water on them, that would clean them. And that's when holy water was used in the Old Testament. Don't need it anymore because we don't have that sacrificial thing anymore. But we know there are some denominations that still use holy water, but that was one of the Old Testament rituals that they performed. But it said, anyway, when you had a man who believed his wife had committed adultery, you would bring her to the priest. He would take a glass, small glass of holy water, and he would set her down in the midst, and he would reach down on the floor of the temple and grab a handful of dirt and put it in the holy water, mix it in there together. Then he made the young lady drink it. There was a curse on her if she had defiled her husband, if she had committed adultery. There was a curse on her, and it said that she would begin to get sick, and her belly would swell, and her legs would get real sore. And that's how she would know. You'd know she was guilty of adultery. That's what the Lord, one of the instructions the Lord gave to her. If she didn't make her sick, then she wasn't guilty of adultery. So that was the way you tested it when you didn't have proof of it. Now, you didn't stone them to death because you didn't have the three witnesses, but you had proof of it, and she was cursed because of that and may not be able to have children. It goes through that whole chapter there and talks about that. But one of the things it points out in there is if a man brings his wife in there to prove that she's an adulteress, and yet he has been guilty of adultery himself, and he doesn't want to admit it, and he has no proof against it, but he's trying to prove it on his wife, and she drinks that bitter water it talks about, holy water with that, he's the one that gets cursed. You don't accuse somebody of something if you yourself are guilty of it, whether or not anybody knows it. In this case, they didn't know it, whether it was on the husband, they didn't know whether it was on the wife. But if one of them were to accuse the other and make them go through this little ceremony and they were guilty themselves, then they were the one that were cursed. They were the ones that were condemned. Now you think that's part of the law of Moses too. So you go back here and say, and Jesus is saying, all right, y'all know the law. You've been quoting the law to me. Who is it here that's without, has never committed adultery? Not, and I'm not talking about committing adultery now, but any time in your past. If you've ever committed adultery and yet you're in here accusing your wife of this, you're going to be the one that gets cursed. You can't go. It's what we call today, we tell you, you got to go to the court with clean hands. You can't go in there. I've been guilty of adultery. Nobody knows about it. But yet I think my wife has, and I'm going to accuse her so I can, you know, put her, the curse on her. If that's the case, nobody knows it, but that's not true. Somebody knows it. Lord knows it. And the Lord will reverse that. You're the one that'll get the curse, not your wife. That's part of the law of Moses. When you see that, that's what he's saying here too. He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone. If you're truly her accusers, then you've seen this take place, you'd be the first one to cast a stone. But you better not be guilty yourself. If you're guilty yourself and you're accusing her, then you're going to be the one to suffer the consequences of curse and condemnation. Look when he says that now. He says, now he that is without sin among you, let him be the first to cast a stone at her. Number one, that has to be her witnesses. Who caught her in this act? Which is probably includes the man who committed the act of adultery with her, caused her to commit it. He's there. It's the only way they'd known to have caught her. Not only that, but if any of you have committed adultery any time in your life, you better not be the one to be accusing her either. So he said, all right, which one of you have never committed adultery and never did it with her? Then be the first one. Step up. Step up. We'll let you throw the first rock. And again, he stooped down and wrote in the ground. When he said that, which one of you is not guilty ever of adultery? Then y'all be the first one to cast a stone. And he puts his head down and looks down. Well, while he's looking down, verse 9, and they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, not convicted because they have witnesses, but convicted by their own conscience. You know, that's the bad part about being a child of God, isn't it? You can sin and say nobody knows it. Problem is, I know it. I know it, and I know the Lord knows it. We have to be careful when we get into making accusations when we ourselves know we're guilty of a sin, but especially the sin we're accusing others of. And then we try to accuse that of someone else. It's a great example for us in the church. You know, we have problems from time to time in the church in which we have people that have committed a sin. You know, and I can look and I can pick some out. And Brother Stephen, you know, I know Brother Stephen did this, so I'm going to bring charges against him in the church. And yet I've been guilty of sin every bit as bad, maybe even the same sin. But nobody knows it on me, but I can prove it on Brother Stephen. So I'm going to accuse him. What the Lord tells us back over under the old law, if that's the case, then I may prove it and prove that Brother Stephen is guilty. And I have no idea whether he is or not. But I can prove he's guilty. But if I'm guilty myself, I'm going to get the curse too. I'm not going to get out scot-free. We have to be very careful about accusations we bring among our brethren. That, number one, we better be true. We better have the witnesses. And number one, we shouldn't. Number two, we shouldn't be guilty ourselves. Now, which one of us, I'd have to step down real quick. I'd say, which sin is it that I hadn't been guilty of? And I talk, when Jesus told us in the New Testament, what you do in your heart, you've committed the sin also, whether you've committed it physically or not. It's kind of hard for us to accuse our fellow brethren of almost any sin and put them on the spot and give them trouble. You know, back over there in the New Testament, in that Sermon on the Mount, when he said, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. This story is about forgiveness. We've all been guilty of sin. Now, I may look at, you know, somebody else. I may look at Brother Joe and say, how can he do that? I'm not subject to that. You know, I can pick out somebody who's got a drug addiction. And I don't have a problem with drugs, thank goodness. But I don't have a problem with drugs. But I can look at him and say, how can he do that? My gosh, that's crazy. You know, and I'm going to condemn that person for that, for being a drug abuser. And I'm not trying to tie Brother Joe with the drug. But you can't be a drug abuser. Well, I don't have that problem. But I may have another problem just as bad. probably do. If I start accusing other people and trying to condemn them, when I myself should be condemned, then I'm in trouble with the Lord, because the Lord will see it and take care of us. Now, we're not to put up with sin. We would address it and take care of it. But if you look here, we get down here at the bottom in a minute, our job is forgiveness. The Lord will take care of the sinner. We're told that many times, vengeance belongs to me. You know, I'll take care of that. That's his job, not ours. We'll say if somebody's done that, we want to get it and make sure they get punished. Our job, primary job, is forgiveness. Now, we're not to settle for repeated sins, public sins that would cause condemnation on our church and our congregation if that takes place. But we have to be very careful about how we accuse others and judge others if we ourselves can be guilty of it. They were convicted by their own conscience. They knew they were as guilty as she was. Maybe not the exact same sin. Maybe it was a sin in their heart, but they were still guilty by their own conscience. And that's our problems we can get into sometimes. When we know we're sinners, I may be able to keep it hidden, but I can't keep it hidden from the Lord. They went out one by one, beginning with the eldest. Now, this is a backwards thing that we normally do. You know, I think of when we, like the Supreme Court, when they get ready to vote, there's 9 judges on the Supreme Court. Supreme Court of Texas, when they go behind their chambers, they've heard the arguments and they go behind their chambers, they vote, and they vote with the youngest judge first. So they're not influenced by the decision of the older judges. They want to know your honest opinion. And so the youngest judges, the newest ones on the court, have to vote first and tell how they would vote. And you get up, and then the senior judge is the one that gets the last vote, decide how the case, how he would vote on the case. You don't let the older ones influence the younger ones. In this case, it's the others. The eldest ones convicted themselves first. Those that were more experienced convicted themselves, and they left, walked out. And says they walked out one by one, beginning with the eldest. My dad used to say, this is like turning the light on cockroaches. They all disappeared real quick. They scramble. Even unto the last, and Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus lifted himself up again, next time he looked up, they're all gone. And he saw none but the woman, and said unto her, woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? She can't be condemned to death unless she's got accusers. He's following the law. See, he put him on the spot, and probably not any question she'd committed adultery. I believe she was set up to do it. But she's committed adultery. That left you pretty clear that that's probably taken place. And she doesn't deny it. So he says, but where's your accusers? You got to have 2 or 3 witnesses to put you to death. And now, even those that might accuse you otherwise, make you drink the bitter water type of thing, they're all gone. Nobody's accusing you. So legally, you can't condemn her. You can't put her to death. That's what the law of Moses was. And so Jesus is technically following the law, which is what the scribes and the Pharisees were trying to get him to do. All your accusers are gone. Well, we don't have any witnesses against you. Even if you're guilty of murder, if you don't have any witnesses against you, we can't condemn you. And there's no evidence against you. And so all the evidence has left the room. So Jesus is following the law technically. He turned the tables on the scribes and the Pharisees who were trying to put him on the spot in a technical case, make him be wrong whichever way he went, but he reversed the tables on them. Now, legally, he can't put her to death because he's got no condemnation of her because there's no accusers. But does he know she's guilty? Does he know she's a sinner? Yeah. He gets in here at the bottom verse and he says, she said, no, there's no man, Lord. And he said, neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. He knew she was a sinner, and he forgave her. Now, he followed the law of Moses technically because there was no one to accuse her now. There's no witnesses. They're all gone. No evidence. But he knows she's a sinner. And so if you're a sinner, you got to pay for that sin. We all know that. You got to pay for that sin. Brother Don brought this up a while back. You know, if I'm good on the law and everything except I violate one part, I'm still violated the law. She's violated the law. Did she have to pay for that? And then the law says you got to pay for it. Did she have to pay for that? She didn't pay for it, but he did. He died for her sin. He forgave her, and he died for her sin. That's what he does for us. He forgives us, and he pays the price for our sin. Did he follow? He followed the law to a jot and a tittle. He followed the law procedurally. She couldn't be condemned today because there was no witnesses against her anymore. And yet she still had to pay for the law because she'd violated the law. That payment was made by him. You know, you'd go to the priest and you'd have a sacrifice made. An animal was killed and blood dripped on the mercy seat to take care of your sins. That's what he did. He died, his blood on the mercy seat right before God. He died and he paid for her sins. He pays for our sins. There's a beautiful lesson in this. Number one is that he's paying for our sins, period. Taking care of us. But also is there's a lesson of forgiveness. This is not about adultery anywhere near as much as it is about forgiveness and us not making accusations against our fellow men. And how many times do we see that? You know, we know sometimes we think, you know, the person that usually is hollering the loudest and condemning somebody is guilty of that sin himself, but he keeps it quiet. We see this all the time, and my goodness, we're watching the presidential campaign right now, it goes on. We know that takes place, but we see it in the world a lot. The person that usually complains the most is usually guilty of the sin. They've just got it, it's kept private. They've been able to keep it to themselves. When I start pointing a finger like at Brother Gary, I better be clean before I point that finger. You know, again, it's not talking about not addressing the discipline that's required in the church, but the Apostle Paul over there in 1 Corinthians says, you've got a man in your church that's committing problems, fornication and adultery. You need to remove him out of your congregation. But he comes back in 2 Corinthians, he said, I think he's paid his price, bring him back in. You need to forgive him and bring him back in. Forgiveness is a wonderful lesson we need to learn. Not only does it make a better person out of us, but you also are able to help rehabilitate the person who perhaps sinned by you bringing them back in. We're not holding that against you. We're going to bring you back in, which is what Christ does to us. He doesn't hold our sins against us. He takes care of them for us. Y'all have been kind with your attention. My prayers that the Lord will bless you.